Jen Zamperali on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.
Have a listen to this clip, first of all. Here we go. Okay. Do you know what that is? I think you do. If you're my age. So recently, the Prodigy changed the lyrics to their hit song, Smack My Up. It is just another example of PC or wokeness gone mad, is it? Or is there actually more to it? Should art be immune to the shifting morals of society? Well, RTE entertainment journalist Alan Corr joins me now to discuss all. Alan, you are very welcome to the show. Good morning.
Thank you, Jennifer. Good morning.
It's great to have you. Okay, what are, let's talk about some of the works that have become, I'm going to say it, let's say problematic.
Yes, well, it seems to be that now this is a very fraught and emotive subject,
yes,
as you know, Jen, and it's very hard to negotiate this without offending anyone. But it does seem to have become open season on whether art, whether it's cinema, whether it's kind of music, whether it's literature, you know, should meet a new standard of moral, of what is morally accepted. You know, we're going through this age of manufactured outrage. And mm-hmm. I think we've heard a lot over the years about that Christmas classic at this stage, Fairy Tale of New York. We always have this debate. But more recently, Smack My Up by the Prodigy has come under the microscope of this, which I believe are the new kind of moral arbiters out there, the gatekeepers of what is acceptable. And I think the Prodigy have denied bowing to pressure, but they did change the lyric.
They did.
The original lyric is "Change my pitch up," and then the so-called offending line "Smack my up." But they repeated the line "Change my pitch up" twice during their recent performances. Now that sounds to me like a request from the sound tech. Yeah. Change my pitch up.
I know.
But it seems to be they're taking notice and they're cognizant now of people might be offended by this lyric.
People might be offended, you know, by it. Am I right in saying when they wrote the lyric, it wasn't to do with any kind of abuse towards women. It was to do with, we're going to smack it, we're going to hit it hard.
That's
speaking
right.
About a night out on the town.
Well,
yeah?
They've always claimed.
Did I just say a night out on the town? Am I that old? Oh my God. A night out with their mates, let's
hip.
Just say.
You're still hip, Jennifer. People still say that. It's okay.
But I'm just wondering why, if the intention wasn't to be degrading to women, why did they change it?
Well, 1997 is when that song came out.
Yeah.
It went to number 6 in the Irish charts. Mixmag, the readers of Mixmag voted it the best dance song of all time, which I find more offensive than anything else, to tell you the truth. Were kind of standards back in 97 looser or whatever? Maybe people got the joke back then?
Yeah.
Because the reveal in the video, if you remember the epic video, which is about this incredible night out in the town, really, really bad stuff happening, drug taking, assault, all this kind of stuff. The reveal is when the protagonist in the video looks in the mirror and we find out that it's a woman, and it's a young woman doing all these terrible things, which seems to me to be the Prodigy subverting the idea that men were the aggressors and all the rest. But as I say, I think that because with the advent of social media, we do get people deciding what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. So I think the Prodigy, might have taken notice of this and changed it, although they have denied that.
Okay,
course.
I suppose as a parent of a young lad, if he delved into the dance world and the music scene and this came on, I wouldn't be too keen on him singing along to Smack My Pitch Up. You know, if I'm being honest with myself.
Well,
I remember when
the song came out in 1997, I was both a callow 30-year-old and I was quite taken aback by it. I mean,
yeah.
I admired them for it because if I remember the culture back then, it seemed to be the likes of Fight Club was the big movie in that era. Music was far more edgy and controversial, and so was the content of a lot of movies. There was a lot of ultra-violence going on in that decade in terms of arts, which I think is more mediated now. And directors and writers and pop stars are taking more notice that they might offend somebody. But is this a sinister development or should they be doing that? That is the question now in the 21st century, I think.
Can we talk about Fairy Tale in New York for a second? Obviously, we all mourned the late, great Shane McGowan last week. But he changed a famous lyric himself. How did that whole story unfold?
This is a long-running saga. I mean, Fairy Tale of New York by the Pogues came out in 1987. It went to number one in Ireland. Famously, it didn't go to number one in the UK. But from the very start, there was, you know, a flashpoint over the use of a certain offending word. Mm-hmm. I'll refer to it as the F word. Mm-hmm. So there was calls at the time for the lyric to be censored. But I don't think it really took hold back then. That was 36 years ago. But the debate has increased every single year. And it reached a crescendo, as far as I'm concerned, about 5 years ago when people from this very station called on RTE to only play the censored version. And RTE, in my opinion, decided, no, we're just going to go ahead and play the original version. And this, to me, brings into sharp relief the whole question of whether art should be censored. Now, there are two versions of this song available to play, and you as a DJ, you can play either one.
Yeah.
So it's down to the individual responsibility. The BBC, for example, initially would only play the original version, but then after an outcry, they reverted back to playing the non-censored version. I mean, some DJs refused to play it. BBC Radio 1, which is more conservative than BBC Radio 2, played the censored version, whereas Radio 2 in Britain mm-hmm. played the uncensored version. Shane McGowan issued a statement, I think last year, to Virgin Media when this kind of debate started again. He said that he didn't want to create any rows and people could play whatever version
they wanted. Yes.
Now, you have to bear in mind that this song was written by Jem Finer and Shane McGowan of the Pogues, both men who have explored the seamier side of life in their songs. And they're not condoning the words of the song. They're merely fictionalizing an argument between two people.
Yeah.
And I think that is fine. Yeah. Personally.
Yeah. And it's there. And if you want to listen to it, it is still there, which is which is the point as well. But there is an option and decided by the artist, which is important to say as well. Can we look at the growing trend in self-censorship? Because big name artists seem only too happy to change material within minutes of release. Is this becoming a bit of a gimmick, Alan?
I don't think it's a gimmick. I've always believed that this sounds rather highfalutin now, but I've always thought that self-censorship is the worst kind of censorship, where you're mediating your own art for fear that you might offend somebody. So your original vision might have to go through some kind of self-editing phase so you don't risk offending anybody. I mean, we've seen some of the biggest artists in the world, namely Taylor Swift. She, when she put out her re-recorded version of Speak Now, her 2010 album, she did change the lyric on one of the songs to make it appear less offensive to a certain person who fans thought she was talking about in the song. Beyonce has done it as well.
Okay.
Lizzo has done it as well. The word in question for Lizzo and Beyonce had two separate meanings. They meant one thing in the US and one thing in the UK. Another example of Britain and America being divided by a common language. So they did take notice of the fact that some people might find this offensive. So we had better change it. But I think that when you start getting into the realms of self-censorship, I find that personally quite sinister. And I don't think that the artist should be doing that. But then again, Jennifer, it's their work and they're entitled to do what they want.
Okay. And sinister in a sense that I want to appeal to a greater audience so I make more money kind of
thing. That's more cynical though,
isn't
it?
Yes, that is
sinister.
Cynical.
And cynical.
Yes, yes. Okay. But there are plenty of holdouts. Let's talk about like gangster rap or this. Let's have a listen to these lads are saying no to every bit of censorship.
I'm going down to South Park, gonna have myself a time.
Friendly faces everywhere, humble folks without temptation.
Okay, so why are some works just immune to the pressure to change?
I.e. like South Park.
Yeah.
Or indeed Family Guy. Well, because, I mean, that is the unique selling point of those shows, is it not? To be offensive. And I think, you know, South Park and Family Guy are both very, very funny shows. But they make a virtue out of being outrageous. And anybody who attacks them for their lack of wokeness or their lack of political correctness is on a fool's errand, because that's the point. In other words, if you are offended by these shows, that's essentially what the lads involved, Seth MacFarlane and the creators of South Park as well, that's what they are aiming to do. I describe these people as equal opportunity offenders. I mean, everything is up for satire with these people, whether it's religion, sexual, national identity, politics. Like, for example, when South Park, a good few years ago, had an episode set in Ireland and we all turned out to be a bunch of, you know, raving drunks, was anybody really offended? It's comedy. And I think that's the, you know, the essentially the kind of the unique selling point. Gangster rap in the early 90s. Looking back on that now, at this 30-year remove, when I listen to Ice-T and Ice Cube, the first thing that kind of, and first thing that strikes me is, and Ice Cube, when he played here the night with Cypress Hill, is, wow, how did they get away with this?
Yes.
Back in the day, we had stickers, Tip of Gore and the PMRC, parental kind of concern about, you know, bad lyrics. They put these stickers on albums, on rap albums and on heavy metal albums as well.
God, you were so cool when you had them.
Which only encouraged us to buy them.
Oh, it's so cool. Yeah. We were so excited about that. Absolutely.
Tip of Gore.
Yeah, that, well, you couldn't have rappers censoring themselves because that would just demolish the whole genre of music in a way.
You could talk about, there's two sides to rap. You could talk about the Dallas Soul side of rap, the Daisy Age, kind of late 80s, kind of like peace and love rap. And then this West Coast, you know, gangster rap came along and it was extremely misogynistic. Mm-hmm. It was extremely violent. It did glorify gang banging, gang violence and all of those things. Mm-hmm. But that was the point of it. And its major selling point was among young white men.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So there you go. Okay, so which artists have spoken out about the impact this has had on their creativity? Anybody saying anything? Well, anybody going, I refuse to change?
It's such a fraught conversation that I think some people have spoken out about it. Ricky Gervais, for example, Jimmy Carr, who specialises in this kind of like surgical strike kind of, comedy. He's very, very kind of zoned in on a certain kind of way of offending people and appalling people, but he gets away with it because he's got this kind of slightly mischievous kind of way of going about things, like a choir boy gone bad or something like that. Ricky Gervais, I think, sees it as a far more serious thing. I also think that other pop stars and writers in particular have said, why should they have to bow to what are considered modern mores if they're setting a novel in the 19th century or the 18th century or at a time when we weren't as enlightened as we are now. So certain artists have spoke out about it and how it's affecting what they can and cannot do. And I think it's just extremely, you know, fraught and emotional and emotive kind of area to get into because we don't want to offend anyone. I mean, people do not want to set out to offend people unless you're South Park or family Guy. So they have to be very careful, I think.
Okay, more careful now. I mean, do you think this is going to impact creativity in the future?
I kind of do because even now you will see health warnings before the repeat of certain shows on certain TV channels in the UK. They will give you a health warning. So in the future, might it be the case where, for example, Twitter is a very good example. Dave Davis, who's one of the founding members of the Kinks, his band name has been censored on Twitter because of the word kink by an algorithm. So this computer is now censoring what human activity might be. Do we need health warnings? I think we're all grown up enough, really. And we do have the watershed, Jennifer. Don't forget the watershed, 9 p.m. That's the cutoff point, is it not?
Yes, absolutely. Okay, well, definitely food for thought. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Have you listened to a song recently or watched a movie going, actually, that's kind of problematic and have refused to listen to or won't listen to it anymore? I'd love to hear from you. You can text me on 51552. You can send me an email on jen@orty.ie. Alan Corr from Orty Entertainment, thanks for coming in to talk about cancel culture, self-censorship and art. Always interesting. And we'll be back with more after these.
Jen Zamparelli on 2FM with Leia Healthcare. Always a beat ahead. Visit leiahealthcare.ie. Leia Healthcare, looking after you always.